Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 178, Science Faction, the Silurian period.
Every week you have me back into a corner because you refuse to go with euphemisms for dick as our intro.
That's right. We are indeed doing geological periods as our intro bit, the Silurian period, spanning 24.5 million years from the end of the Ordovician, which we covered last week, at 443 million years ago to the beginning of the Devonian period, 912 million years ago. Again, these time periods are getting shorter and shorter because more interesting stuff is happening during them. The base of it is that major extinction event we talked about last week, the Ordovician-Silurian extinction event, where 60% of marine species were wiped out. There's a significant evolutionary milestone during the Silurian where basically jawed fish that we talked about developing in the last period started expanding out in adaptive radiation and multicellular life started to appear on land. We have a whole bunch of really complicated land animals starting to spread around and we're starting to see
dinosaurs?
The world. Not yet dinosaurs. Oh. Not even close, actually. We are actually closer to dinosaurs now than this period is to dinosaurs.
If we were to time travel to this period, how deadly would these creatures be? Let's not talk environment or anything else. Just
well, there's a lot of like bacteria and protists, so I feel like they would definitely be deadly.
Everything was bigger back then, so it was like a bacteria the size of a terrier, right?
Yeah, it was.
Everything was bigger back there, really?
No, there were certain times where, because of that rich oxygen environment, that animals and things got very, very big. This, not necessarily one of those times. But that's okay, Damien. Way to spread science misinformation in our intro bit.
Yeah, listen, it's like a game of double dutch, except when I jump into the mix, there's terrible science information happening.
And we get things like vascular plants that grew beside lakes, streams, and coastlines, and terrestrial arthropods.
What are arthropods?
They're basically segmented body types. We still have them now in insects, but they don't exist in large animals anymore.
And human centipedes.
No, Damien, that is not how that works. Again, we start seeing life on land form. We start seeing the Earth as we know it slowly, piece by piece, get put together. And eventually, we're going to see more terrestrial life get even more interesting next week in the Devonian period.
So this is the week where our intro bit gets interesting. Not this week, but next week. Okay.
It's always like, next week.
So you're like
next week.
Teasing us with a bunch of shitty, boring intros just till this good one. You're like Tolkien.
And speaking of shitty and boring, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Ricciardo. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
By implying that you're the shitty one. Does that mean I'm the great one?
No, I mean, as I call BS has proved over and over again, you can't win a single game over years of this show.
I like how like it's like a Groundhog Day but in Bobby's life, but only if I win. Like it just resets to the first day where I've never won.
That's exactly how I describe it. And of course, our scientist for the evening, Dr. Ava. Dr. Ava, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back.
And we're glad to have you here at the Madhouse Comedy Club along the skyline of beautiful downtown San Diego. Come on out to Madhouse to check out the Saturday Night Showcase. And when you're not doing that, check out our website at www.thesciencefaction.com for all the articles we cover here, as well as some we're going to get to, and some very interesting news about an upcoming science debate that we will be having here on Science Faction.
Oh, we're so badly want to ruin the secret. Oh, that's going to be so good.
I want to know the secret.
I'm sorry, we're just teasing it this week, but we will start revealing little clips of this on our website, www.thesciencefaction.com. Let's just say we will address a particular science denial claim with a live science debate event, and Science Faction will be part of that. Keep checking our website for details.
Also, feel free to tweet us at Faction Science because of, I don't want to say low volume of tweets we've been getting, but let's just say below where I'd like them to be.
Right, which is one, below one.
I will personally respond. The show will personally respond to any tweet.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Guys, you know I love it when the most exciting, most popular science news article of the week happens to be an archaeology, human anthropology article. I love every single one of these, and this is not only one of those, it's a big one.
And also, it's completely subjective.
It is not at all.
I happen to think the most interesting article this week was a linguism article that I read.
How dare you? First of all, everybody in this room knows you're lying about that. Indeed, it looks like we have found the oldest Homo sapiens skeletons ever. And not only did we find the oldest one, it's not like we went from 200,000 years ago, which was the previous oldest one, the Homo specimen, which has been the oldest one for at least a few decades now. So it's held its title for quite some time. We didn't go, oh, we found one that was 210,000 years old, so it's a little bit older. We found one that's over 300,000 years old in a completely different part of Africa. That's super interesting. We've pushed back the date of Homo sapien more than 50% of the known length span of our species.
I can't help but think that Bobby really likes archaeology because it's kind of like a penis length competition. Like, who's got the oldest one?
How dare you insult my dong-sized science?
No, I found the oldest one. I found the oldest one.
First of all, there's never been a locker room like that. Oh, you think your dick is old? Look how old this dick is. These balls touch my knees.
I had the girthiest article.
This is really interesting, and all of the oldest stuff before had been in East Africa. We had been along basically the Great Rift Valley. We had found stuff in, like I said, in Omo and parts of Tanzania, Ethiopia, all those areas along Eastern Africa where Homo sapiens evolved.
Where all the big dicks are.
Yeah, where all the huge old dicks are.
Don't go to China for a big dick study. That's...
We're talking averages, right?
That's true.
We're talking averages.
But this one was found in Morocco at
I'm
over three...
the Chinese Yao Ming of dick size. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bobby, but...
This one was found in Morocco at over 300,000 years old. Super, super interesting. This isn't a single specimen. This is 14 different specimens from at least 5 different individuals that date to over 300,000 years old.
So 14 pieces of evidence from 14 different people who were very old.
From at least 5 different people.
From at least five different people. And how did they look like?
Almost exactly like us. These are modern Homo sapiens. So they had some more primitive characteristics. Oh, you're talking about dong size? How do they look? About the same girth, but way longer.
What was the previous species before us?
Well, that's argued about where we directly came from. Some say Homo heidelbergensis. Some say some other derivative of Homo erectus or Homo ergaster or Homo antecessor. So there's actually a few competing claims for that.
What do we know about them physically, like strength and dong size?
About the ones right before us?
Like, I want to figure out if this was an upgrade or a downgrade. Right.
Well, I'm going to say this. We don't know because the soft tissue doesn't preserve, unfortunately.
What about word of mouth about our ancestors, like our great-great-great-grandfather's dong?
Let me tell you a story, son.
Hung like a bull moose he was.
Well, you know, I will say this. We don't know for sure, but what we can say is that our nearest closest relatives, chimps and bonobos and the other large primates, all have much smaller penises than we do. We've covered this before, and we think there's a sexual selection for us. So we can say, if we are comparing to them, likely... If that trend kind of happened later and later as Homo sapiens went on, they probably had smaller dongs than we do now.
But along with that trend is that we've lost tons of upper body strength. We're way less intimidating. So I'm imagining way back when, as we're transitioning from this species, was the argument then, like, oh, my grandchildren are total pussies. They can't even climb a tree with the bare hands anymore, but huge dick.
Well, or maybe it's that whole thing about the guy with the big lifted truck spending too much time at the gym trying to overcompensate. That was Neanderthals. They were actually no genetically different. They just spent a lot of time making up for tiny dicks.
I don't have anything to prove, Grandpa. I don't have to slay 3 of my own species to prove anything to Grandma.
That's right.
I love this conversation. I don't have to say anything. And you're making complete fools out of yourselves.
How dare you?
Am I? Is this the most foolish thing I've said on this podcast?
Just because we're not analyzing dicks linguistically, Dr. Ava. So indeed, they found 14 actual fossil specimens that belong to at least 5 different individuals, but they also found a lot of associated tools and faunal bones that had been cut. So things like gazelles, zebras, that kind of stuff, which apparently they were hunting, eating, scavenging, doing something like that. Very, very interesting stuff. And the most surprising thing is its place in Morocco. That is not where we would expect to find this 300,000-year-old fossil. We'd expect to have this in East Africa along the Great Rift Valley. This is really interesting, and it brings up a lot of interesting questions. Was Homo sapien way further spread, especially earlier Homo sapien, than we had originally thought? Did Homo sapien itself evolve someplace else? Because now all of a sudden the oldest one is not in that East Rift Valley.
So you think that they evolved further up north and then they wintered south before they ventured north again?
That's a possibility, but I don't think that's likely. I think what's more likely is they did evolve in East Africa in the Great Rift Valley, but some parts of them radiated and spread into that Morocco area.
And then they died.
Or they then bred with later groups that came out as well.
Yes, they were found in Morocco, but you also could tell these fossils were from Morocco because they had that small fez hat on there.
That's right. and no respect for human life. But one of the interesting things that I have not seen anybody connect on any of the science articles. I read up a bunch on this, including on the original publications for this article and all of the other science literature coming out. There is something really interesting, which very few people know about. We covered it very briefly on Science Faction. In those genetic test surveys, you know, those like 23andMe genetic test surveys, one guy a few years ago came back with the most divergent Y chromosome ever, meaning his seemed to be separated from everybody else's by the longest span known. And it seemed to be somewhere between 200,000 to 300,000 years ago. That's super, super interesting. This was a guy from West Africa. That was super interesting because it seemed to predate our species. What this suggests is, hey, maybe our species has been around for a long time, and that guy actually did have a divergent Y chromosome that was linked to maybe these widespread groups like these fossils we're finding out in Morocco. So this is really interesting. We might actually be seeing some reflection of that group. Like you said, they died out. Maybe they didn't. Maybe little strands of them survived to this day, which is really interesting.
Did the guy tested also have a fez hat?
Yes, I assume so. I assume he also had a fez hat. He was not from Morocco. He was actually from West Africa, but still super interesting. This will kind of open up some more research in terms of looking for ancient Homo sapien in places outside of the Rift Valley and in weird divergent spots across. Because Morocco, we might just say, oh, that's Africa. Same thing. It is really, really far from East Africa. It is like farther than going across the continental United States. So this is actually a really, really big span of distance to cover. And also, even though at different times it was a different size and different difficulty to get across, we're talking about going across the Sahara Desert.
Was it already a desert 300,000 years ago?
It was. It wasn't as big. It wasn't as daunting. But still, I mean, you're talking about a very primitive group making it across there. This is all super, super interesting stuff. There's a lot more research that needs to be done in terms of what type of tool types they use. We do have some tools at the area. In fact, the tools themselves were dated using thermoluminescence. That's how we got some of the dates. We also got some date confirmations by looking at the animals that were butchered at the site. And it brings up a good point, which was before Omo was the oldest fossil we had at 200,000 years, it didn't mean that scientists were saying we know Homo sapiens are only 200,000 years old. What it meant was we could say we know for sure we're at least this old. This isn't surprising in the sense of saying, oh man, this completely upends what we knew to be true. What it does is say we now have evidence for an even older emergence of Homo sapiens. So really, really interesting stuff, and will kind of change a lot of the human paleontology textbooks.
Since it was a slow transition, at what point are they saying the point where most people were Homo sapien as opposed to the previous species?
So that's a good point, which is when we do cladistics in this sense, when we do human taxonomies, a lot of times these species are hard to distinguish from one another. In fact, there are some human paleoanthropologists who say we shouldn't even speciate all these groups because we know Neanderthals bred with Homo sapien and blah, 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 blah. So we should just consider them a wide range of the same species that have different kind of little classifications to them. However, there are basically some set specs. We say when a brain reaches this cc's, this size, when we have certain prominent features on the face, when we have a non-sloping brow ridge, all this kind of stuff, we have these set diagnostic criteria where we say when we get to this, we are calling this the species line between Homo sapien and Homo antecessor. These fossils fall within that range. And while they have some primitive characteristics like a brow ridge and that kind of stuff, they do appear to be anatomically modern human beings.
I agree on the classification system. Where I disagree with the classification system is where I am no longer allowed to sexually approach somebody based on some imaginary line that a scientist created.
Wait, so are you having trouble with Neanderthals? Are you saying that there's some Neanderthals around that you have been trying to court and that has been unsuccessful due to some kind of legislation?
I am saying the same laws that kept the loving couple apart in Virginia years ago are now being used against me and my Neanderthal lover.
All right. Now that we've ventured away from the dong comparison, can we talk about the interesting article?
So what Dr. Ava is referring to is our next science article. Yes, we'll move on to article number 2, Language Changes How We Lie.
Just from this one line, I think that's probably bullshit.
Almost certainly. Well, what's interesting is these researchers wanted to look at the way different people lied based on different languages. Now, we're going to address some of the issues that Dr. Ava and I both immediately had when we saw this particular article.
How comical it is, like and how well they can hide that they're lying, or do they do the no?
Yeah, exactly. they analyze the language that they use when they're lying. And this is actually something that people in like FBI profiling and stuff do a lot. They say, okay, well, when somebody's lying in an interrogation, they tend to do this, 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 and this. They had people read purposely untrue statements, which you kind of have to do for these tests, because you can't be like, hey, did you cheat on your wife, and then just see what they say, like, and then he looks like a cheater, he's probably lying.
Well, actually what they did was they had them come in pairs. So what, first of all, they had five different groups of people,
right?
They had white British people, they had white Europeans, they had South Asian people, and
black Africans, right?
So four different groups, and then they paired them up in pairs within each group and made them write purposefully wrong statements, mm-hmm. and also opinions on a controversial topic, one in which they agreed with and one in which they disagreed. So, for example, what is your opinion about same-sex marriage? And they had to write their own opinion, but then also one that was either for or against. And then they switched and they had to read each other's statement. So they both produced and comprehended lies.
And so what they did is they looked at it based on those divisions that Dr. Ava brought up about where they came from. And then they analyzed, okay, pronoun usage. Did you use a lot of I's? Did you avoid using I's? Did you do this? And they claim to have found a correlation between different groups, different language groups, and how they then manifest those
which is actually not true, because they all used English. It's not that they spoke different languages. And also within each group, there were a lot of different languages represented, right? So the Black Africans, they spoke about 15 different languages,
right,
as their native language. Yeah. They just happened to communicate in English for that test. So it's entirely not about their linguistic
background. Well, not only that, but how do you separate out linguistic ideas from cultural ideas?
Oh, but the paper wasn't about that. It was merely about culture.
Like when you say that, I imagine when a British person lies, his hand shakes as he carries tea, is unable to properly set it, and says, oh, well, about a year ago, I was certainly not voting for Brexit.
Right, but if you were just looking at culture or just looking at language, you would have to have controls for each of those. So what do you do to control for either one of those?
I think language does not at all enter in that discussion. What they did was they measured, there's a measure of collectivity in the society. So how much is this an individualistic society, and the white British society scores very high on that,
right,
versus a collective society, and the lowest score score for collectiveness.
Yeah. Or the Dothraki or other historical groups.
So the South Asian societies that they sampled scored lowest on the individualism score.
Right.
Right. So they were interested in, does the degree of how you're coming from, how much you're coming from an individualistic society, influence the way that you lie?
Right.
And the measure that they used was pronoun use in English.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that language influences anything in this. This was just the dependent measure.
Right.
It was just a tool. And what they found was that, yes, it did. It did influence how they lied to each other.
So you brought up some good points, like some confounding factors, including multiple language spoken by individual groups within that.
I don't think it's a confounding factor, because language was not of interest here.
But so what I would ask for you as a linguist, when they're saying you have different pronoun usages, well, how do you know that there's not an association with different pronoun usages in their original native tongue? Because like you said, they're translating back to English, right? So if you're in a language mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily make as much use of those pronouns in the first place in your native tongue, are you more likely to not use it when you translate back to English?
Right. So there are some languages that have a phenomenon called prodrop. So mm-hmm. you don't have to express all the pronouns in the language. For example, in Italian, there's a lot of prodrop for subject. You don't say, I went to the store. You say, went to the store. And I don't know enough about these languages that were tested to actually assess that. But it's important to note that what they're interested in really was the difference between a truth and a lie. Right. So individually, they were not measuring across languages. They were measuring within each person. How often would you use a particular pronoun when you were telling the truth uh-huh. versus when you were telling a lie?
So you're saying they kind of have their own control because exactly. they're comparing against the same person.
That's not a problem for this study.
Didn't we talk on previous episodes about how they have to control for, like, for example, a person lying, reading a paper in a study is not as incentivized to lie as somebody on the stand for murder. You know,
So what you're saying is, you know, do you put different effort levels? You're right, because we have seen some studies before where they were
tried to up the incentive to lie well by saying if your lie is convincing to the other person, then you get paid more, and also the community center where this thing was held, the study was run, gets paid more, which is appealing both on an, I think it was very well done because they appealed both to the community incentives and to the individual incentives. I think it was excellent.
That's smart. And that seems to be kind of the trend that some of those other studies take too. You get a different reward level based on your ability to make a convincing lie. Mm-hmm. So that ideally what's going on is that person is really trying to get you to believe that lie.
Yeah.
Unless they're like somebody who's so committed to, no, I don't believe funds should go to, I think that if that community organization,
that's right,
they should work for themselves. I'll take a hit. That's
fine. I really don't like that priest. But the study was interesting because it did show that there are people do use different strategies across different cultures. So in Western cultures, we tend to use less first person pronouns. So less I did this versus he did that.
When we're lying. Right.
Exactly. So the hypothesis is that you're trying to draw attention away from your own person. I don't know how true that is, but it's a hypothesis. And you found the opposite in like highly collective societies.
But the reason that's super interesting is because, like I said before, this is used for interrogations.
Yes.
The FBI uses this type of data when they're looking at whether or not a subject's telling the truth. And this study might then make them look at this and say, oh, wait, yeah, this is usually the case, but we're looking at somebody who's from Southeast Asia. So our previous analysis is actually completely wrong. It's the opposite.
Although I have to say that, I mean, forensic linguistics is a growing field, but I don't think that it's actually the case that any law enforcement solely relies on that.
I wouldn't say solely, but that could certainly be like you could look at somebody and be like, oh man, they have absolutely no difference in their I usage pronouns. That might take him off the radar for you. Whereas, you know, if you knew that their culture wouldn't necessarily reflect that, it might not. You might just wipe that off the table.
One thing that I found a little bit confusing was I always thought that when we are lying, we tend to embellish the lies with some irrelevant details.
Right. We all know the guy who's like, oh, my girlfriend two towns over, she's got blonde hair. She loves the color purple. She likes those suspenders.
Sinus allergy. Yeah, she has to go get shots 3 times a day. Her doctor's name is Phil, by the way.
And I think what they found was that it was the exact opposite for this study.
Right.
So the Westerners, or white British and white Europeans, they tended to use less embellishments for their lies.
Right.
So here, maybe there could be a problem both of analysis. I don't know I read the up on the program that they used. I've never heard of it before, to actually code for these things. But it could also be just like the situation that people were they knew that they were in a situation where they were tested for their lies. So maybe they might have employed an orthogonal strategy, and it's actually something they knew, I should use less details, so I'm going to use less details in the lie.
So wait, we live in a culture that embellishes less on lies? Is that what you said?
No, more.
More?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, typically that's what we say. But
yeah, but in this study they found that they used less details, made up details for their lies.
So a Chinese fisherman's fish is how much bigger or smaller than the American fisherman's fish?
I don't think it's the size that they would embellish, but like what
the girth. It's the girth.
No, it's like the color of the fins.
Well, the other thing I would state is, like you said, this is a written test, and there might be a difference between the way somebody lies when they're writing and the way somebody lies when they're speaking. Because that thing you're talking about, that embellishment where that person goes on with the details, a lot of times that's because of the uncomfortable silence of trying to convince somebody that you're talking
to. That's also true.
So if you're just writing, you might not have that uncomfortable silence, and your lying tactics might be very different.
And the other thing that they said didn't matter, but I don't know why it shouldn't matter, is that the youngest group was the group with the highest communal score. So the Southeast Asian people, they had the most male participants, and they were between 20 and 29 or something.
Mm-hmm.
While the white British, they were pretty balanced in gender, and they were like around 60, as the British tend to be.
Wait, I was kind of drifting in and out. The average age of Britain is 60? Like the average age is, what an old, stuffy people.
Yeah,
I think they've
true.
Been an old stuffy people for about the past 300 years.
I think they're
years.
Born old stuffy people.
My baby was born with his first monocle in his...
Yeah, you just did an impression of a 13-year-old British guy.
Oh, yes. Quite a big football fan. Go Manchester.
All right, guys. Let's move right on to everybody's favorite game. I call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
Who is everybody?
That's a very philosophical question you're asking there, David.
It wasn't intended to be.
This is I Call BS, the game where I read four science news articles and the panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. Now, since Damien has literally never once won this game and not we have been playing for years, we need to give him a little bit of a handicap.
Do you?
At this point, Dr. Ava, way too smart, way too educated, way too much common sense to be able to play against Damien and still give Damien a good chance. So we've brought in a competitor who's a little bit more akin to Damien's education and intelligence level. Dr. Ava's five-year-old son, Juju, will be playing for Dr. Ava today. Juju, are you ready to play?
Yeah.
Good job, Juju. All right, Damien, are you ready to lose?
Hold on. Before we get this stacked game, I want you to know that this has been a big Milgram experiment to our audience members. And not what, like, as I'm sitting here being intellectually assaulted and demeaned every week, and not one of our fans has hit the buzzer and said, stop the experiment.
No, they just keep shocking you because I am the authority figure and you are about to die of an electric heart attack.
Help, please.
To say, though, that he's my son. Like, he's pretty smart.
That's true. So, five-year-old Ava's son, about the same as Damien. All right.
He's already bilingual. This is unfair.
Let's get started with article number one. Scientists think they may have discovered the reason flamingos stand on one foot, and it's to better avoid predators. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. If anything, flamingo sexual predators within the flock can catch them more easily because they're not as prepared.
That's true. All right, and Juju.
I don't believe it.
All right, Juju goes bad science. Article number two.
Can you say why you don't believe it? I think I can say why he doesn't believe it.
Why is that?
I actually know that it's bad science. Good job, Juju.
Because he's whispering it in your ear right now.
No. But Juju knows that flamingos stand on one leg because they are conserving energy.
All right. Let's go to article number two. New research suggests that a fetus can recognize faces. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, but what's more unnerving is how is a fetus even viewing a human face? They should be tucked away in a womb. What type of horrible parent is letting their fetus out after curfew?
First of all, now they have these glass fetus walls. Like, you can just replace a part of the human stomach with a glass wall so that you can see the fetus. Yep. It's much more polite, you know?
It's funded by the Navy. They want people to be more used to being on submarines.
That's exactly correct. And Juju.
Do you think that babies in the belly can recognize faces?
No.
All right, Juju. Let's go on to article number three. New research confirms that red wolves and eastern wolves are indeed just recent coyote-wolf hybrids. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, but these hybrids have a name, and as the Native Americans called them...
God damn it. Don't say it.
Maze.
God damn it.
Oh,
that's going to be a banned word on this show. I am all for freedom of speech, but I am going to have to ban a word.
That's racist.
All right, and Juju.
What do you think? Are red wolves and eastern wolves, are they just coyotes?
No.
All right, Juju says false. And lastly, article number four. New research confirms that you shouldn't feed babies under 1 year old animal dairy products. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science because people are animals and we breastfeed. I breastfeed.
No, you don't. And Juju.
What do you think? Should we give cheese to babies that are small?
Yeah.
So Juju said, yes, we should give babies it. So he says the article is false.
Good job.
Doesn't matter which way he answered because Bobby will gerrymander the shit out of this election.
All right, let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. Scientists think they may have discovered the reason flamingos stand on one leg, and it's to better avoid predators. Damien thinks this is false. Juju also thinks this is false, and this one is bad science. Indeed, it is actually for energy consumption. This was kind of confusing because for a long time we couldn't figure out flamingos stood on one leg.
it seems that it would take more energy because you'd have to balance yourself, and that's actually very hard to do. So if you stand on one leg, it actually takes more energy for you to do that than standing on two legs.
But there was this awesome study where they took a dead flamingo.
Yeah. They took a bunch of frozen-ass flamingos, and they put it up, and they were able to tell, based on this locking mechanism in their leg, that they have a specific physiology that makes it easier for them to stand on one leg than it does not only for us, but for them to stand on two legs.
Could this be an argument for yoga? Maybe like people who do yoga.
No, again, we don't have it, Davey. We don't have this part of the leg. I should just ask Juju.
Juju is trying to be a flamingo, and he's obviously a human being.
I'm going
to
be way better being a flamingo than you, Juju. Watch this.
He's worse at that, too.
Debatable.
All right, on to article number 2. New research suggests that a fetus can recognize faces. Damien thinks this is true. Juju thinks this is false. And this one is science.
No,
with
it's
a
actually
huge
not.
Caveat.
Yes. It's actually not true.
Calm down there,
it's actually
helicopter
not true.
Mom.
No, it's not true, no!
Ava's going to be the type of person who calls up the kid's school, like, listen, you marked that test an A.
To be fair, she's the one who's going to spend hours editing this later.
That's
perhaps
true.
We should hear her out.
So, in fact, what they did is they projected the image of faces into the womb using a projector where the baby could actually see. And they also did random shapes. And they were able to kind of show that the baby would turn its head and look at these images of faces more than they would at random shapes, indicating that they could tell a face. Now, it is possible that babies can tell a face in the womb. That wouldn't be that surprising, given that we have some pre-programmed things in our brain to recognize stuff. And we already know that they can do it when they are babies from similar tests. However, one of the problems and confounding factors in tests like this when you just use shapes versus faces is a face is more complicated than a hexagon, or a face is more complicated than a triangle.
Not to Picasso.
Right. So what you would want to do is actually show faces with something that's also a mathematically as complex or as interesting shape for them to look at, so that you can't just say that they're looking at it because maybe the face's complexity would have them look at that face longer than they would a triangle or a hexagon. So if they wanted to redo this test in a more objective manner, you would have nonsensical faces. So maybe something that has eyes, a mouth, a nose, but they're put in such a way they don't look like a face at all. So you have mathematically the exact same complexity of a figure. In fact, the exact same sub-images of that figure, but in different orders to see if somehow they're attracted to the ones that look like a human face as opposed to not look like a human face.
Years later, all of these children will develop fetishes for shapes.
That's right.
The other problem is that this effect goes away entirely right after birth.
Well, no, we do see
No, it's actually, it's not replicable for just newborn babies. So it is replicable when the babies are just a few days old.
Right.
But not right after birth. So that means that probably the kids can, if it makes no sense that kids can do something in the womb that they can't do right after birth.
I read the rebuttal to this, which is the idea that right after births, when they're in the womb in utero, they're in a liquid state and can therefore move their heads easier.
Like the T-1000?
Exactly. When they get a few days older after they've done some work kind of in the environment, they get neck muscles that allow them to move easier as well. But newborn babies are at a disadvantage to be able to move in that fashion.
I would lobby for Juju still getting the point.
Of course you would. Of course you would.
This science, this is really something that came out as a study, but we don't really know whether it will hold up.
When I win, I'm going to be such a poor winner all over your side. Just, oh, yeah, you idiot. Mom let you listen to dick stories today? Oh.
All right. Article number 3. New research confirms that red wolves and eastern wolves are indeed just recent wolf-coyote hybrids. Damien thinks this is true. Juju thinks this is false. And this one is bad science.
Woo, Juju!
There was a big 2016 study, which we covered here on Science Faction, and actually made a really big splash in the canid research community, that looked at it and said, hey, these eastern wolves, these red wolves, they're actually just a recent hybrid of coyotes moving into wolf areas and breeding with them. And this research looks at that exact same genetic data. They're not doing any more studies. They're looking at the same genetic data. And they said, one, you used a really small sample size from very particular areas. But two, even within your own sample size, you did a rudimentary genetic analysis and came to this conclusion. We do know that regardless, both groups think that red wolves are a hybrid between gray wolves and coyotes. But what they said is, this is a species that's been around for 100,000 years. This is not a recent admixture. This is something that is an old established species. And you just saw with some modern hybridizations that's come in, and you looked at those modern hybridizations and made a broad assumption. And that is not justified and probably not true. All right. Lastly, article number 4.
New research confirms that you shouldn't feed babies under a year old animal dairy products. Both of you guys thought this one was false, and this one is bad science. And since the tie goes to the scientist, Juju takes the lead. Good job, Juju.
Yeah.
All right, Damien, you hear it? You hear him?
Unfortunately,
he's stomping on you.
Juju, your mother helped you beat up a disabled person today. I hope you're happy.
I actually didn't.
Use this to tell her about this in therapy years from now. So that some horrible man who talked about dicks and you made him verbally and intellectually beat me in front of a crowd of literally tens.
I'm smarter than Damien.
You and literally everybody else, Juju.
I'm not debating that whether he is or isn't. I'm debating whether or not he had an unfair advantage.
It is indeed the opposite of this. The infants who have been found to avoid cow's milk products in their first year were nearly four times as likely to be sensitized to cow milk compared to infants who consumed it before 12 months of age, basically making lactose intolerance. Now, there is some correlational issues we should look at here, including the fact that lactose intolerance is a genetic thing that you inherit. And so if your parents are lactose intolerant, they're less likely to give you cow's milk at an early age. So there's some correlation issues. But even controlling for those correlation issues, we do see exactly what we would expect, which is that those kids who are exposed to cow's milk in those early periods are less likely to experience allergies to them later. We see the same thing with peanut butter. We see the same thing with a lot of allergies that we see developing.
Alcohol
will be an interesting one. Just get the kids super wasted. Listen, son, I don't want you being a lightweight later on. It is one of those things. When you get introduced to something at an early age, you're less likely to be allergic to it later on. So we can see that exposure to kids at a young age is actually really important. And we've gone the wrong way the past few decades where we're like, we got to keep the peanut butter away from these kids. We got to keep this, this, and this just in case. In fact, we're creating these allergies.
If I was a kid, and like, let's say I got to my teenage years and I never got to have a Reese's peanut butter.
Oh my God.
I'm so pissed at my mom.
And justifiably so.
See, I'm on top of recent science. That's why I don't ever clean my house. You have to be exposed to dirt. And since we don't have
absolutely
a cow at home, yeah, I'll just try to recreate the
whoa
stable feeling.
Oh, I'm sorry. What kind of derelict mother are you?
Well, I might be a derelict mother, but my son is smarter than Damien.
Well, yeah, not a huge accomplishment on that. Come on. Oh, you mean he didn't get held back out of kindergarten? Yeah, big, big bragging rights, Ava.
I was the biggest kid in Pep in kindergarten, though.
That's true.
Several years in a row.
Yeah, and congratulations on graduating last year. All right, congratulations, Juju, for your victory. Let's move right on to Damien Channels a Dead Scientist.
And now, Damien Channels a Dead Scientist.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Welcome to Damien Channels a Dead Scientist. The bit that makes Bobby feel less guilty about all the things that he does to me prior to this bit on the show.
That's true. My hatred of you and this bit in general does make me feel totally clean about all the sins I commit against you in any other part of our lives.
Yeah. You're the guy who says I have a black friend, so it's okay that I
that's
voted
true
for Trump and have these views. Right. Like, you're like, no. I mean, yeah, I make fun of a simpleton, but at the same time, he has a bit.
That's right.
Well, thank you. I'm very grateful. Speaking of which, let's get this thing started. We're, by the way, for those of you who have not heard this before, I am going to channel the spirit of a long dead scientist into my body, and we're going to question him. Bobby, of course, is going to play the role of a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to doubt everything that I say.
Right. Point out the mistakes
that is right in front of him.
Right. The evidence that you're lying.
Yeah. Just so you can watch Bobby be willfully ignorant.
Uh-huh.
Let's get this thing started.
The shaking part is my favorite. He's going to say spirits. Wait for it. That's how you know it's real. That's how you know it's real.
Part of the seance.
Yeah, of course. Must be.
Spirits.
Wow, it's oddly cognizant of you. Really breaking that fourth wall.
Hello, and who has summoned Ben Franklin to the Madhouse Comedy Club?
Really? That's Ben Franklin's voice.
This is the way a Ben Franklin sounds. I defy you to challenge otherwise.
I'm a little bit like my grandmother.
Yeah, I believe you sound like Conan O'Brien's bit, but all right, keep going.
I died a 70-year-old man who had syphilis and several other venereal diseases.
That's true.
Given over a long history of crushing pee.
You know what's funny? You actually did have a long history of crushing pee, so I can't dispute that.
Fun story. My common-law wife, who I met as a young man, I offered her my hand in marriage, and she, on her mother's advice, selected another man who took her dowry and ran away to the Caribbean. She came back to me years later with the son that she had conceived during our union, and because of state law at the time, she could not have been remarried. She was kind of forced to stay with me as a second choice, but at this time I was a wealthy man and could get away with crushing pee for 20 years in Europe near the end of my life.
Yeah, it is funny that Franklin went off to Europe, especially France, and as an old man, as like an old dude, in a time when old dudes didn't have great medical care and stuff, was still just slamming it to like young 20-somethings throughout Europe.
You have to understand the standards of cleanliness were slightly higher in the colonies than it was in France at the time. So I was the man whose sack reeked the least.
Maybe you were the man who forced them the most.
Who forced?
I don't think he was in any physical condition to be forcing anybody to do anything.
If you look on the internet, there is several educational videos about my life. And one quote, which I never got to hear in my life, but certainly in research done afterwards on Google, said that the reason Ben Franklin got laid so much was because he was a man who listened. Apparently not a lot of Frenchmen at the time listened like Ben Franklin.
I have a theory that the French have a strong love for anthropology, and as we discussed before, in anthropology, the oldest dick wins.
I'm sure that was an inside joke from earlier in the show, but I'm laughing because the spirit in this room is so fun. Yes, let me tell you a little bit more about myself. I was a man of many tri-corner hats. I was an author, a printer, a Freemason, a diplomat, a mathematician, a scientist, etc. I think you know what I'm getting at.
A Renaissance man.
Yes, truly a Renaissance man. And
what are you doing after the show?
Sorry, Ava, you're too old for him.
Damn it!
Me and Dalia and one of the girls from TLC will be crushing crotches later.
Interesting. I didn't realize you'd go that way. All right. Interesting job, Franklin.
I was an early abolitionist. How dare you? When I was editor of the Pennsylvania Gazette, by the way, I am given credit for a lot of things because I was basically the only guy who could read in my town. I invented the lighting rod, bifocals, the Franklin stove. I facilitated the creation of the Philadelphia Fire Department. And the University of Pennsylvania, the third worst Ivy League university. Thank you very much, Cornell and Brown. I was the first postmaster general, and by far it's most interesting. I got wealthy. I was a very wealthy man because I published the Pennsylvania Gazette and, of course, the Paul Richards Almanac. And later in my life, around the colonial years, I published in the Pennsylvania Chronicle, which was a rather revolutionary and incendiary newspaper, the Fox News of its time, if you will. Go Patriots.
You were also ambassador in London, right? Not only France.
Yes, I was America's representative to the colonies at the time. In fact, I became an American hero by arguing against the Stamp Act.
Which was
a law that kept women, for at the time, the king wanted to keep tattoos off women's lower backs.
Oh, is that it?
And I, as an American...
That was the Tramp Stamp Act, Damien. That was a completely different one.
Oh, you're talking about the other Stamp Act.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, the other Stamp Act. Well, that was, of course, I was arguing against the taxation of the colonies and a law that was saying that the colonies could only use paper and purchase paper that was printed on stamp paper from London.
Now, you had some really interesting publications throughout your time. You were a publisher yourself. I believe you had...
But not a good one. Yeah. I the editorial standard of the Pennsylvania Gazette where I was on it was not good. I'd had too much on my pot. I could not write every article. There was not an exceptional editorial standard at that point.
Now, one of my favorite things is that he had... Poor Richard's Almanac or something. He had this thing that basically was a book of like old whimsical sayings, and there was a lot of like early to bed, early to rise. But then when Adams went and met him in France, he realized that Ben Franklin would stay up till like 1 a.m. at the salon, you know, talking and doing stuff, and then would sleep till noon and, you know, a lot of hard work stuff. And meanwhile, he's just banging a bunch of French broads. And so he's like, you're kind of contradicting and stuff. However, he did write something that was very true to his beliefs, especially when it came to women. And it was an advice to a younger man. Mr. Franklin, what was that piece of literature you wrote that was a little bit more honest to your true nature about what a young man should do in terms of women around him?
Yes, I believe you're referring to my early publication of The Game.
No, that is not true. That is
as an early pickup artist in my 70s.
You were just peacocking with a wig?
Of course. You're of course referring to the Book of Secrets.
No, I am not. Boom, Ben Franklin, I gotcha. No, in fact, what I'm talking about was his advice to a friend on choosing a mistress, which was a letter that he wrote in 1745, basically giving advice to a young man about how to channel his sexual urges. The letter was never actually published because he was such a revered figure that they were afraid it would do something horrible to his reputation. But indeed, it was later discovered and kind of much more telling of his actual feelings.
There was also something else discovered in your house in London. Can you tell us about that?
I was holding it for a friend. You have to understand.
Yeah, actually, there was this friend involved. Hewson, his name. Do you remember him? Your friend Hewson, the anatomist?
The anatomist? Oh, that is an interesting term for him.
I just thought he had the oldest dong in town.
If we're quite honest, that was some of my later and more syphilitic years. The brain was not what it once was. It was not making lightning rods at that point. Perhaps you can refresh my memories.
Can you make the boom sound?
Boom, Damien! Boom!
Because we know that Franklin let his friend use the basement for anatomical dissections, and then the friend buried all the corpses in the basement. They were discovered in the 90s of the past century.
I had a friend named Jack who stayed over. He lived in London occasionally, of course. Not important. I did not come here on Earth to be slandered. Oh. I came to educate the populace.
I might also forget about just dead people being cut off in my basement.
Yeah, it was more common at the time.
It's one of the things I would do.
I will put Franklin curse on you, and that will ensure that you never touch hands on one of my $100 bills again.
All right, Damien, get out of here.
I don't know who this Damien character is, but I'm assuming you meant to say Ben Franklin, get out of here. In which case, I will tell you the British are coming, so is Ben Franklin.
I think you just confused Paul Revere. <Ben
Franklin>. I invented that saying, not Paul Revere. Who is it this time? And I feel patriotic.
No, you don't, because you were lying. All right, and thank you, Dr. Ava and Juju, for coming out for Science Faction 178. And thank you, audience, for coming out where you learned about the Silurian period, the oldest Homo sapien fossils ever found, the language of lies, why flamingos only stand on one leg, how fetuses can recognize faces, why red wolves aren't just a recent hybrid of wolves and coyotes, and why you should probably feed your baby milk in the first year of life. Thank you so much for listening, and come on back next week for Science Faction 179.
Come here, darling. I'd like to leave a Franklin stove on your chest.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.